It made perfect sense for you to get involved with Pimp My Ride then, because you're looking at these guys like, we've been doing this shit for years. You think you're coming up with this stuff new?
And somebody handed you $100,000 to do to your car. What's the stupidest thing that you would do with it? That's what we did. Now we show that we actually do build quality cars. I remember Exhibit coming out and going, hey, this is a nice car. Like, he was completely shocked.
Welcome to Oil and Whiskey, an Ironclad original. Today's guest is Galpin Motors, Galpin Autosports, Autotopian president, co-founder, Rat Fink aficionado, car collector, Ford enthusiast extraordinaire, Bo Bachman. Bo, welcome to Oil and Whiskey.
Well, thank you for that kind introduction. I guess I do kind of like cars, so good to be here.
Yeah, dude, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on, man. I got to tell you, I've never met you in person, but obviously I follow everything you're doing. I mean, it's hard to miss you out there.
Oh, thank you.
And you're like a mystery, man. Like, I've always been wondering, like, where you find these things? Where did the interest come from? There's, like, a lot of questions, so I'm pretty stoked.
Yeah, we got a lot to get into.
I'm stoked to dive into this.
All right. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the stuff that I love. So I used to love whiskey, too, but I quit drinking about 7 years ago now. So I'm only on the oil part. Although I had some good memories, or lack of memories. Anyway. But good stuff.
Well, yeah, so, I mean... We know a little bit about the story before we get into, like, just strictly car collecting and stuff that's more in our wheelhouse. But on the dealership side of things, is it your second generation or third generation?
Well, my father, second generation, although, you know, my father started here at Galpin as a salesman in 1953, started the car business in 52. But my grandfather worked here after he retired from the gas company. My nephew works here, my son and daughter work here. So we got all kinds of generations. So actually second generation of those working in the business and loving it.
Awesome.
So dad did it here at Galpin for 70 years and, I might even beat him. Who knows?
Wow. That's crazy. So I would have to imagine growing up in the business, you could have gone a completely different direction as far as car style or what you were interested in or collecting, or, but it seems like you have a pretty eccentric, taste or eclectic taste. You're into a little bit of everything. It seems like you like pink too.
Eccentric and eclectic, definitely. And lately, yeah, it has been a bit of a pink thing. And, I actually got that directly from my dad. We used to sell, well, and the eclectic part as well, because at Galpin, we've been customizing cars since 1952. And that first car was on the cover of Motor Trend, and I'm still looking for it if anyone finds it for us. So when I was growing up, we always had galpinized vehicles that were pretty, pretty wild and outrageous. We sold motorhomes, we sold conversion vans. In fact, the conversion van business grew out of Galpin, and we would do all kinds of wild things. Like, we had Madame Frenchies that had a love seat and shag carpeting and floor delays, wallpaper, and a naked lady painting on there, and a fireplace. So that was pretty out there. Then one that looked like a Western saloon. So we were doing all these kind of crazy themed. So I know I definitely got some influence from there. And on the pink side, we used to order really different colors that were only available on fleet. So dad would order, like, pink Mustangs, and you'd have to order like 50 of them. And we would do these rainbow sales and things like that. But he was always proud of the pink Mustangs that we used to sell. And I remember one time, the Fuchs McLaren came out and just blew our minds. And I showed it to dad. He's like, oh, we got to paint our GT that color. I'm like, well, dad, maybe we can get another one and get it made in that color. So that's what we ended up doing. And, since then it kind of grew from there, because if there's a rarest color, it's gotta be pink or, fuchsia. Purple's my other favorite color, which I'm really into, and I've had a lot of purple cars, but, now the pink thing's kind of fun. And, we've been doing modern pink Mustangs for years. But, you know, that's the thing about Galpin is we've always had fun with cars. We've always, you know, listened to what customers are into. And, you know, as my dad would say, that, you know, what the youth is into and young people. And it's been, you know, just a lot of fun. So I grew up with all these weird things and it rubbed off, you know.
It's cool. Wild on the dealership model side of things, because you've seen it for, I mean, you've got such a rich history with classic name dealerships that have done modifications in the past. But it seems, even up until this day, there's a you're either full in or you're full out on a dealership model. Like, you want nothing to do with any type of customizing or modifications whatsoever, or you're doing
all the modifications.
Yeah, you're a Baldwin Motion, or you're a Galpin, or you're something like that, where it's just like, we're going to build fucking custom cars and we happen to have a dealership. But then there's other dealers that are completely against it in any way, like not even putting on a set of wheels for the new purchase that you made. Whose thought process was it to go all in on that? And how does that work in a traditional dealer model?
Well, my dad always had an open mind, and he loved creativity, as did my mom. And, you know, my mom did a lot of wild things back in the day that, you know, most women weren't doing. And she drove, you know, 24-hour endurance race in a Mustang. And, you know, she was a pilot and, you know, had two holes in one in the golf. She was amazing. And she was absolutely fearless. And my dad just loved creativity and seeing what was in the market and what would come up with. So, like, the off-road craze, it was a... you know, here at Galpin, we'd sell back then, and this is like late 60s, early 70s, we might sell 2 4x4 trucks a year. And Dad would say one would be the beginning of hunting season, and the other would be the clearance sale, you know, whatever we can do to sell it, discount it and all that. And our get ready manager, his name was Bob Ferris, said, "Hey, Bert, why don't you let me fix up one of these trucks like the kids are doing? I'm an off-roader, and, you know, I want to lift it and put on, you know, big wheels and tires and a brush guard and a winch. And, you know, maybe we can paint it up, put some lights on it." And we did. And, man, it was a hit. And we went from selling 2 a year to 25 a month. And it was really part of that whole, off-road craze that started in the, you know, late 60s, early 70s. And, you know, I was proud that we were really a big part of that. And I even saw, I think it was one of our first ones, was called Fox Hunt. And they noticed it was in the original Smokey and the Bandit, like, as they drove by it. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And so that's what kind of grew out of it. He was willing to try things that maybe other dealers weren't. He was very much a business person. And, you know, honestly, not so much a car guy or anything, but he loved when people got creative, and he loves serving customers. It's all about the servant's attitude at Galpin. So if we can serve people by having fun with cars and trucks and vans, then that's what we did. And it just kind of grew upon itself. And, you know, we became known for it. And, you know, when I grew up, a stock vehicle, it didn't look finished. You know, like, wait a minute, you know, that thing needs some wheels, it needs some paint, you know. Yeah. So I was very blessed. I couldn't imagine having a better upbringing.
Well, I did a little research getting ready for this one, and came across some of the older customizations. I saw the little Mustang rumble seat conversion in the back.
Yeah.
That whose idea was that? That's, I've never seen anything that crazy before.
Yeah, so... I don't know who idea it was, but if you know who Heinz Proctor was, he basically brought the sunroof to America. And he had the gas station across the street from us in San Fernando. So the very first sunroof that he did was at Galpin. So, you know, the first sunroof in America was technically done at Galpin. And I think he had done some others, you know, around that time. So I don't know if they ever, you know, put it so much out there. But that's what formed American Sunroof Company, which was ASC. And then ASC really became, you know, where they were building, you know, show cars and doing convertibles for the major OEMs. So that's actually who built it. That was back in 1967, I believe. And we did that one, and it was on the showroom floor. Interestingly, a number of years ago, I got a call from a guy and said that somebody had this rumble seat in their garage. And so anyway, I went over and ended up buying it from the guy. And it was funny because the seat wasn't in the rumble seat. And he goes, "Bo, do you know why they took it out?" And I said, "Well, I would assume for safety." He goes, "No, actually, it's because the spare tire wouldn't fit. So they had to take out the cushions." So that was, that was something I learned from a customer. I think his mother actually learned how to drive in that car. And then actually years before that, and before I ever bought a car, there was somebody in the Valley that had one in their garage. And I went over to look at it, and we ended up, I lost their address, lost contact with them. And then all of a sudden last year it popped up and somebody called and said, "Hey, do you want to buy this rumble seat Mustang?" So I did, obviously, because it's a major part of our history. And that was the one that actually had the sunroof in it and the one that we used for all of our photography and everything. So it's still unrestored. It still had the rumble seat in it, which is, all the cushions and everything. Definitely not safe, but we called it. Yeah. And it's funny because they show it like full speed on a track with like a lady like laying back in it. And, like, I don't know if she had a drink in her hand or not, but we call them parade cars. So that was the idea, is that it would be used during a parade or something very low speed, but not to be driven on the street back there, unless you really didn't like the people. But yeah, that was a little bit out there. But my guess is that was Heinz Proctor and ASC. But again, we were willing to give it a go, and we did.
That's wild. Imagine throwing the kids in the back of the rumble seat of the Mustang. You couldn't hear a thing.
I was in the car with the kids for like 2 hours yesterday. That actually sounds kind of good. Not hearing
the old Homer mobile. They need their own bubble top back there.
Yeah.
I got six kids, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
So where did the Rat Fink obsession start? How early of an age?
Or
Big Daddy Roth, more specifically.
Yeah, I had kind of grown up with a bit of Roth and Barris. So it was kind of in the back of my mind when I was a kid. So it wasn't something that I particularly was focused on, but the imagery and everything, I certainly knew about. And it actually kind of came to me. This was in, I think, 2000, 99 or 2000. No, it was 2000. And they were doing a Rat Fink reunion show here in the Valley and looking for a sponsor. And I was like, Big Daddy Roth, man, that was like when I was a kid, that would be that'd be a lot of fun. So we ended up sponsoring the event. It was actually just when I kind of revamped galpinizing into being something a little bit more wild, because back in the day we were doing crazy things like rumble seats, but it had become more, paint and tires and, normal truck stuff. It's still wild, but not anything outlandish. So I started doing some outlandish things, and I had, this truck with a coffin in the back of it, and a pipe organ that would play through it and some other weird things. So I'm like, yeah, let's sponsor it. And that was actually the first time I was showing my crazy customs. Unfortunately, that's right when Roth passed away. So I didn't get a chance to meet him, but we go to the show. And I look across from our booth, and I'm like, my mom and dad came out, and I'm like, "Mom, Dad, check it out. George Barris is right over there, right across from us. There's the Bat, I think it was the Batmobile at that time that was there." And I'm like, I'm like starstruck and everything. And my dad goes, "Oh yeah, let's go say hello." So we walk across, and my dad goes, "Hey, George." And George looked up and goes, "Hey, Bert, how you doing?" I had no idea they knew each other. George. Like old times. And they're like, "Wait a minute, what's going on here?" So then George Barris was just awesome. And he kind of took me under his wing And we built a Baris, a Thunderbird together, and did some other projects. But that was at the first Big Daddy Roth reunion, again, right after he passed away. So I got to meet Eileen there. And it just kind of blossomed from there. And strangely, I saw Rotor on eBay, of all things. And I ended up, getting a little nuts and bought Rotor on eBay. And it was, in some dirt lot out in Texas. So our guy flew down there and verified that it was the real deal. And that's how it all began. And then pretty soon, when you get a little notoriety, because I think I did a story in Fortune magazine or something like that that you wouldn't expect. And then all of a sudden, people were calling me. And our builder today, his name's Dave Shutton, who's incredibly famous in this area now because he earned it, because he is the man.
He is.
And if you follow him on Instagram, it's always amazing.
Was he working for you at that time when you bought the first one?
No, but he reached out to me because he had Mysterion, his Mysterion clone for sale. So he pitched it on me and I turned him down, because he wanted a lot of money for it. So, but we got in contact. Ironically, years later, it went up for an auction and sold about half price. So I did buy it for a lot less than I could have bought it from him. But he sold it for what he wanted to get. So he got all the money, which it deserved because it's perfect. And then I bought it for a price that I was willing to pay. And then when Orbitron, it was really strange. So I had actually kind of realized that, gosh, man, people have been looking for Orbitron for decades and, very few hints, and the trail had gone cold. And I said to my assistant, I wonder how we could start figuring out what happened to Orbitron. Last I'd heard, it was in El Paso and there were rumors, about some kid that drove it in high school and things like that. And I swear within it seemed like a couple of days, it might've been at most a couple of weeks. She comes in my office and goes, the headline, Orbitron found. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding. And the guy that found it, Michael, he didn't want to be found at that time, but I figured out how to find him. And so we got in touch. We actually met at SEMA. Ended up making a deal and acquiring Orbitron. And then I flew down to, it was Juarez, where it was, where it was found. It was found being used as a dumpster outside of a sex shop in the worst part of Juarez, which, Juarez was already kind of a little bit dangerous, very dangerous, little gang warfare going on down there. But we didn't know any better. So we drive over the border because I flew down to El Paso and we saw it. I'm like, hey, let's go over the border and see where it was found. So we drive over the border. We're going around and we get to the part of town, where it was found. And they're like, lock your doors. We're not even slowing down. We're just driving by because, we don't want any trouble. But luckily, the only trouble we had is we got pulled over by the federales, but we got out of it. And
what did that cost you?
I don't think it cost me anything because Michael knew what to say.
Okay.
He handled everything for us at that point. Later on, we learned that, I think about 2 weeks later, they found a whole bunch of beheaded bodies and there's all kinds of gruesome things going on there. So we decided we probably wouldn't go back for a while at least. But we got to see where it was found and brought the vehicle back to LA. And that's when I contacted Dave and I wanted to get a lot of the original people that worked on it together, but I needed some, real builders as well. So that's when Dave first came on to help with that project. And Joe Perez, who did the original interior, I got a hold of Newt, who actually penned it and designed Orbitron, who Newt is one of those unsung heroes of the car industry that, you know, he designed so many incredibly cool custom and crazy vehicles of the era. So I got him to make sure we got all the lines right. I got the Roth family involved in whatever they could. And then we built out to do it, you know, perfectly and put it back to the day that Roth would have finished it. And the outcome, it just came out just perfect. And I kind of said to Dave, hey man, if you ever want to come and we can have some fun together, let me know. So he was working for General Motors at the time and in the stamping department, I believe. And one day I get a call, Bo, I'm on the road, I'm on my way. So you better have a job for me or whatever he said. Absolutely, Dave. So it's been a ball ever since.
Man, that's awesome. I always wonder when you're diving into restoring some of those old creations, you know, those cars, they weren't like coach builders that built them. So the craftsmanship, I mean, they were made of all like a variety of
substrates,
right? Like, what is it like when you start like stripping one of those bodies? I mean, it seems like you'd get into a situation where there's just nothing left or nothing to attach to it.
Oh, well, that's exactly right, because the frame on Orbitron was like disintegrating before our eyes. So we had to use a new frame, and you know, we save the old one, we save everything, you know, so we put that up on display. But you're exactly right. And you know, I didn't know until then, like Roth didn't believe in things like a tape measure. So one side's completely off from the other side, you know, nothing matches. And that's just the way that he did things. So I don't know, it kind of brings a character to it. Like if you look at where the taillights were, it's like he closed his eyes and just like drilled randomly. And, you know, that's where the lights went. And, you know, but that's the way he did it. And you can't erase those fingerprints. Right. So we believe it's important that you leave the mistakes as well as everything that he did right. So we're not there to recreate history. We're there to honor history and to bring history back alive. Like when we restored Ross' shop truck, which was a true barn find, because it was in a barn in Oklahoma, I think. He started with, I forget the color, it was like this light green. And if you look at all the pictures, because that's the only way to restore these, you can see all the overspray and, you know, where he didn't really do it to every detail. So the first thing that we did is we painted it back to the original color that it was. And then we did the paint job as if he would have done it, including the mistakes. So you lift up the vent, it's all green in there. You look at the overspray, you go, you think it's a mistake? Yeah, it is a mistake. It's a mistake that Roth made. And that's why we're doing it that way again. And that's preservation and honoring versus, you know, trying to make it something that it wasn't.
Right.
And that's very important to us. We believe in the original fingerprints of the people that built it with their passion. And it's more fun that way.
It's so crazy to see too. I mean, I remember, so Mysterion for me is, and it's a shame that the original is no more. It's gone.
Yeah.
But I think I was in middle school and it was like the second or third class of art class, my like first art class. And you're supposed to do like a landscape picture, right? It was all like colored pencils and stuff like that. And they're teaching you, you know, landscape stuff. So I did Mysterion side profile from like the model box and then did like a little bit of sand and a palm tree. And I was like, that's landscape, right? You can't tell me that it's not landscape. And I remember we had to do it all in class and you only had like, you know, an hour thing. I remember it taking like 6 or 7 weeks to like finish that. And that was my first like art project thing. I still have I think my mom had it somewhere.
That's what I was going to ask. A Josh Henning original.
It's around. I've seen it in the last probably 2 or 3 years.
I'd like to get my hands on that. I feel like that's something we can
auction
off.
That should be framed right behind you guys there.
We're gonna auction that off on this podcast.
And I remember being so like at that age, I mean, into cars, but also not knowing things. And I was just wowed by the fact of, I really liked in drawing all the different weird stuff that you wouldn't draw on a normal car because you don't see the coil springs hanging out in front of the axle.
Right.
You don't have like one asymmetrical headlight. You don't have two motors. You don't have, there was just so many cool things to be able to draw that you wouldn't, you know, ever do on something like that. That car still to this day, I mean, the color and the just, it was so wild. And I'm generally not a very asymmetrical guy. Usually I really like symmetry, which that car was not, but.
Well, to your point earlier, it's either all or nothing. I either love things perfectly symmetrical or, to your point there too, Mysterion. You know, that's one of my all-time favorite cool cars because it just is so out there.
Yeah.
And I don't know, the way that he did the asymmetrical kind of design on it, to me, it's magic.
Yeah.
You know, Orbitron, you know, honestly is odd looking, although it's, again, one of my all-time favorites. But Mysterion, just, it's so weird, man.
Yeah.
And I mean, one of the weirdest cars of all time, which makes it one of my favorite cars of all time.
Yeah, it definitely is for me, for sure.
And so cool as a kid. How old were you when you...
this was... let's see, I can do the math back. I had to be maybe 10 or 11.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
I'd love to
see
this.
That's cool.
I'm going to find it. I will. I'm on a mission to find it. It's out there somewhere. I bet my wife knows where it's at.
You gotta find stuff. I gotta see that too.
Ask Bo. He's tracking down things at sex shops in Juarez, Mexico. He can find an old picture.
I didn't find that one though, man.
So hopping back a little bit, you mentioned something popped in my head. You talked about all the old conversion vans and, you know, the painting of the naked lady, and you had, you know, shag carpet and stuff like that. And I couldn't help but think, like, it made perfect sense for you to get involved with Pimp My Ride then, because you're looking at these guys like, we've been doing this shit for years. You think you're coming up with this stuff new?
Well, it's kind of funny you say that, because that's exactly the conversation we had.
It just, in my mind, when you're saying it, I'm like, oh shit, all the pieces fell together.
So a mutual friend is Al Uzielli, who is in charge of Ford Global Entertainment. So, you know, they placed boards in movies and things like that, and did American Idol, all that kind of good stuff. So he calls and said, hey, Bo, I was just with the Pimp My Ride producers, and I told them they've got to come over and meet you because you guys would have a lot in common. So Rick and Larry came over, and they were in my office, and they're like, yeah, well, we were the first to put in a fireplace.
And I'm like, hell, you were.
I had like kind of a book with all the, you know, old cars. I said, well, guys, we did this before any of us were born. What about a fish tank? I bet you haven't done that. And I go, well, when I was 3, we had this Pinto, and the whole back of it was a fish tank. And I'm showing him pictures of that. And then I'm showing him what I'm currently doing, because that's when I started doing the show cars. Because I thought, well, why don't I do show cars again? Because we can get some PR out of them and, you know, have some fun, get them in magazines when magazines used to exist.
Yeah.
And then sell them and have some real fun. So we were doing things that are pretty far out there. So we had a really fun conversation. I didn't think much of it. And about 2 weeks later, Larry shows up in my office, and there was something that was going on. And he goes, Bo, why don't we just do the show here? And I'm like, okay. And I was a big fan of Pimp My Ride. I used to, because there was 3 segments. The first segment, they would introduce the kid and the car. So during the commercial break, I would sketch out and write out all my ideas for what I would do to it, and then compare it to what, you know, what they did on the show. So I was super, you know, super engaged and loved it. And, you know, so when they talked about bringing it here, I'm like, yeah. And it was an absolute ball, a mass, just crazy, insane, and you know, incredibly stressful in many ways, but we never missed a deadline. We always made sure that kids got back a really safe car. So we did engine, transmission, brakes, all the things they didn't do on the show to make sure that the kids were safe when they left here, because we delivered it on the show, and then we'd bring it back and really fix it up. And occasionally we would do something that wasn't appropriate, to leave on a car or was dangerous, like big going doors. You know, we're not going to have a kid trapped in his car. So we had to tell him to begin with, we're going to have to put it back to regular doors. So occasionally we did do that. But most of it, you know, we left and we just made sure it was safe and let the kids, you know, go nuts with it. And now you start to see them show up every once in a while, which is kind of fun.
That was a fun show. I mean, it's not like highlighting over the top artisans and craftsmen, but it wasn't at the same time, it was so, yeah. It was a good watch, you know?
That's the thing.
It was good entertainment.
The takeaway, you know, car builders in the automotive industry, customizers, hot rod builders, all that, you get, you're so passionate about your craft, and rightfully so. And then you've gone for so long, you know, without kind of any national notoriety, right? You know, it's always been kind of, you know, something that happened with sometimes a negative stigma. So when you do see it come onto a national spotlight and people are starting to be like, oh, so just like Pimp My Ride, it's easy to kind of get butthurt about like, no, you don't understand. Like we do stuff to a high level. Everybody kind of took offense to it versus taking it for what it was.
Sure.
Like they weren't trying to win the Riddler. Like it was fun. They were having fun. And that's where I think my biggest takeaway from this conversation is you enjoy just having fun and doing some cool stuff.
Right. The Pimp My Ride. Go ahead.
Yeah. And, you know, it was like a thing that the automotive community was not cool about. You know what I mean? I mean, we got a lot of like negative things. And thank you for that point, because it wasn't meant to be that. The first thing that I remember them telling me is, you know, Bo, this isn't a car show. And I said, what? They go, this is a wish fulfillment show. And I thought, well, that's interesting, because I was thinking we're all about cars, but it's about fantasy. And every time we did something, we want to do something nobody else had done before, or done, you know, something so outrageous, you know, that, you know, it's more than anyone had done before. But that was the idea. It wasn't to make a great car. It was to make something that was like ridiculous and fun. And, you know, like, okay, if you had your first car and you're a dumb 16-year-old kid and somebody handed you $100,000 to do to your car, what's the stupidest thing that you would do with it? You know, that's what we did. And now we show that we actually do build quality cars, and actually those had better quality than I remember Exhibit coming out and going, hey, this is a nice car. Like he was completely shocked, especially our Earth Day episode that we did with this Impala. I just remember the shocked look of bewilderment on his face, because he'd never seen like, you know, wow, this is, I would drive this. Yeah, this is cool. But it was, it was that period. And now people know what it is. And now we're, you know, back to, oh yeah, that was meant to be a goof. And now you can see we do build real cars. So it's all good. And we didn't win a Riddler, but we gave it a good go.
The reach was crazy, because if you think about like the mass appeal of it still to this day, it's one of the first things that comes up in conversation. There's like three things that I basically need to like get off my chest when I meet somebody new that's not necessarily like a car guy. Like,
because they've got to categorize it.
Right. You're like, no, it's not just like Pimp My Rides. Yes, I've met Chip Foose. Yeah, I know Dave Kindig.
Yes.
And it's, that's the thing. It's like, can we now like just have drinks and like go on with our night?
Hey, Kindig's rocking it now. Yeah, so, that's it. Cool to see. Yeah, now I got mad respect for Chip. God bless him.
Yeah. It's funny though how like you think about that when like as time goes on, you look back on things or whatever with a little more fondness than you probably did in the moment, right? And we all are guilty of like taking our craft so seriously, right? And I have to imagine same thing like in any other thing, you know, music, any type of craftsman, artist, creativity, you see other people doing things. And you're like, no, I take myself serious as an artist, and I do this, and I want to do everything. Why are you getting accolades for this? You see it in music all the time. I mean, you've got guys like catching shit for, you know, the Applebee's song or whatever, and people are like, but you look back at, you know, 15 years from now, and you're like, And you know what?
Applebee songs. That's a catchy fucking tune, man.
You think that's real music though? Like seriously, like on. But I, my point of to being this, I guarantee you, untold amount of people got into automotive industry as a whole, and specifically customizing, specifically because of that show, because it opened their eyes to it, just like Motorcycle Mania, just like all the other shows, because. Once they saw that, they didn't realize you could do things with cars. That might have been their first time to see that you could take a car and do something that it wasn't intended to do or right. didn't come that way, whether it be putting on a set of wheels, low-profile tires. I remember, you know, seeing all that stuff as a kid and then my mind being open of like, oh, shit, you don't have to just take it like you get it. You can do something to it. And that I guarantee you there's untold amount of guys that are probably listening to this or not listening to it, but they're in a shop. Got into it specifically because it opened their eyes to a whole new world. So everybody can talk shit, but
thank you. It's a good point, and to not be limited by anything but your imagination. You know, that's like we didn't ask why to do something; we'd say why not. You know, and like let's do something fun. Why not? You know, and God bless it. You know, my dad was always cool. And mom to be open to it and encourage it. So that was what a great way to grow up and have the resources to be able to do all this, you know, crazy nonsense back then and crazy fun today.
Well, we got here as a note and I blew past it at the very beginning, but it's said that you claim you're the only person that's ever crashed a car from the 19th century in the 21st century.
No, what I was wondering is it was my son's 10th birthday.
Okay.
And so we were driving some weird cars and I was driving some micro cars around and we have an 1897 Leon Bollée. And
Cool car.
Very unusual 19th century car. Where the driver sits behind the passenger, so the passenger is the front bumper. It was the first car with pneumatic tires, and it had a primitive rack and pinion steering in there. So I'm driving them around in our back lot, our inventory lot, and all of a sudden it kicks into second gear, which now from 8 miles to 16 miles an hour, and we're flying. And this car comes around and it's a customer driving and he doesn't know where to go. And I realize I don't want to do a head-in crash. So I had to use like our inventory car to kind of hit to slow it down. I've got my son in front of me. So he barrels out, you know, I hit the car, he flies out in front of me. And, you know, luckily I got it stopped at that time because it didn't have something called brakes, really. It kind of, one lever was gas, transmission and brakes all in one, and you know your mind gets a little discombobulated. So what I was wondering is that the greatest age difference between the car and the passenger in a car accident? Because it was 110 years or something like that between the passenger age and the car. So
gotcha, that makes more sense. All right,
somebody call Dennis.
That's probably a record. I'll bet.
It's gotta be. You know, so my son might have. Yeah, we'll see. For any historians out there, I'd be curious.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of.
Unfortunately, I probably wrecked a few too many cars like that. We had a little micro car deal when you know before we started Autopia, and I got to know Jason Torchinski, and we did a micro car drive, and we were racing, and I flipped over a Moshe, a weird little French micro car. That was my second accident. And then when we were doing the show Driven, which became Car Kings, I did a segment while I was driving the world's smallest car, which was a Peel. And I did the exact same thing. I went, you know, around to do another round and I tipped it over, my hand went through and it flipped over. So I've probably rolled over more for those cars than I should have, but I'm getting better. It's been a few years, so I'm trying to keep it there.
And the peel, the peel actually, that one rings a bell because in my house, my son's 12, my daughter's 10, and he's super into cars, like beyond belief. So he's got his whole car like picked out for when he's 16, and it's like, you know, down to the, you know, engine block, cylinder heads, and finish on the wheels. So we talk about it. Yeah, we talk about it all the time, and then he makes fun of my daughter, and he always says that this is going to be Charlie's first car, and it's a Peel 250, I think it's called.
P50, yeah.
Right. So he pulls it up on his phone, and she goes nuts because it's like this tiny little, it's an awkward looking car, and it's, yeah, it ends in like hair pulling, and it's a brawl.
Full blown fight. Right.
But yeah, it's one of the goofiest looking cars that you can imagine too. But you know, it's surprisingly big inside. Like, I don't know if you know Matt Farah, but he fit inside of it and he's a pretty big dude. And you know, so you can squeeze, but yeah, those, I think they're amazingly cool. And you know, I like those weird things.
So you really don't discriminate at all when it comes to cars. I mean, that has got to be
all over the place.
Yeah, you've got some vast interests there, from 1800s French micro cars to what would be the most modern outlandish.
Well, I got my Ford GT.
Of course you do.
Yeah, I was saving. I was all right. A little bit of backstory, Bo. So, Jeremy is very much into a Ford GT. He really, really wants one. He's been talking about it for quite some time. It has become quite a fun thing because the amount of people that have GTs and
that have been on this podcast,
in circles that we run, it always comes up in conversation. Just about everybody, it seems like, has a GT now, except Jeremy. For me. So we make sure to rub that in his face.
Yeah.
Well, I happen to have one for sale right now, so we can talk.
Yeah, right. we probably don't need to.
But right here on the showroom floor. if you like black on black, it's a beautiful car.
Oh, yeah. This week on Borderland, an Ironclad original, we are going behind the scenes on the controversial crackdown on gangs in El Salvador.
He has enacted what is called a state of emergency. So basically, he has used political power to enact extreme legal measures, which basically removed restrictions on making arrests. So the state of emergency has suspended basic civil liberties, including the right to legal defense, due process, and that has basically given the state authorities the right to arrest whoever they want, whenever they want. And that is basically what they did.
Watch Borderland wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube at This Is Ironclad.
You mentioned Car Kings. So talk a little bit about how that came about. And I mean, if as honest as you can be about what happened, because I thought this show was awesome. And I mean, it was a little short lived for what it could have been.
It was short lived, and yeah, it was a heartbreak because it took years to get it back on the air or to get on the air. Pimp My Ride kind of just got shot down in the air because we were doing great, and MTV, they were kind of notorious for shutting down shows even if they were in their prime. And you know, I guess in New York they don't know, you know, people do like cars in the rest of the country, and you know, so we were kind of like taken aback, like, geez, really? We were doing great. We were like one of the top rated shows on MTV, and we even beat The Hills one week, I think, when it was a rerun. But you know, but it was successful. So when it ended, I felt unfinished, which I still do, by the way. So I had been trying to come up with ideas and things like that. And I met a gentleman who was at the History Channel. Then he moved to Discovery. And we kind of worked on the ideas together. And, you know, what I wanted to do was really tell a little bit more of automotive history and tell a story through building a car and restoring a car, and to give credit where credit wasn't necessarily given in the past, and to kind of, you know, shine a light on some things that had been overlooked or forgotten. And, you know, some real automotive legends or people that we might know and appreciate, but, you know, the rest of the world might not. So we got it on the air, and man, we got some amazing cars. I mean, I have the Pantera, and I legitimately found that engine in the junkyard that was the original engine that Lee Iacocca gave to Carroll Shelby and legitimately found it there. Now, I had figured out that it was there when we went to look for it, but you know, that was incredible. And you know, we did a lot of, I was really, you know, pretty proud of the show. You know, it wasn't perfect, but I dug it. You know, I was really proud of it. And then COVID hit. We were literally the last day you could shoot was the day we wrapped. So we got everything in at the last day. And then they gave us our time slot. And honestly, I had never watched Street Outlaws before, which I should have. Excuse me. So I'm getting ready to, you know, our show's premiering, and I'm watching Street Outlaws, and I'm like, uh-oh, this isn't our audience, you know, because it's fast-paced and yeah. rah, 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 rah. And, you know, we're like a somewhat of a history show. And, you know, one of the inspirations was when I did The Cars That Built America. And I got so much great feedback. Well, I didn't know that about Henry Ford. And you know, people really took an interest to it. So it goes from this like outrageously loud Street Outlaws. And then we come out, you know, driving down the street and like, you know, very artsy fartsy. And you're looking at the GT and telling the story. And I just think, you know, we just lost the audience. And fortunately, it didn't quite catch on. And, you know, I was hoping, you know, during COVID, well, you know, people might, you know, oh, they might really watch it because they're sitting at home. Well, I guess they were watching Tiger King, you know, or other things that were on. So thank you for saying that. And I've had a lot of enthusiasts that love the show. But I really, the goal was to bridge, you know, enthusiasts with, you know, people that just enjoyed history or, you know, enjoyed culture and try to bring car culture to it. So, you know, we did 8 episodes. It was a lot of fun, but you know, now we'll see what the future leads to.
It's interesting because you brought up a lot of good points. I think automotive archaeology, you know, that genre is like, it's obviously underserved, but maybe it's underserved because we're too like fast paced oriented. Maybe a Netflix audience would be a completely different thing, but like you said, I don't know how you get some of those nuggets that are so great, and how do you get somebody to click on that or tune in that's not a car guy, that's just interested in history? I don't know. That's an interesting dilemma. Like, because if you could sit somebody down that was just, you know, had a curious mind and likes learning new things, whatever, they'd come away with like, oh, wow, that's awesome. You know, because it permeates American history so much. It's not just about the car. It's about all the other things that were happening with the car. But that it's a, yeah, I don't know how. That's interesting, because there's so many. Especially as we continue to get older, we get more nostalgic, right? So you start looking back and you start slowing down a little bit more, and you start paying attention to things that you didn't pay attention to, you know, growing up, and you start wanting to dig back in and see the reasoning why. Yeah.
Well, in high school, history was homework, you know, and I had no interest in that. But now that we're older, I love history, and it's fascinating to learn about, and that's what I enjoy watching on things. But you're right. You had to sit down and watch it, and then you'd be engaged, but with short attention spans. Honestly, I don't know if I was changing channels, if I would have had the patience to wait for it to arrive. So it is a good question, because I'm hoping we can, you know, do something. You know, if not, can't do the same thing, but it'd be nice to do, you know, I still want to do another car show, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, I'd love to see something like that have some success. I mean, it is,
there's so much.
The timing is tough, like you said, with Street Outlaws. I mean, great, wildly successful show. And it's all like, you know, burnouts and wheel stands and a bunch of guys standing around in precision turbo hoodies with stacks of cash doing wheelies. You know, it's like, obviously, the youth of today is probably going to land on that, other than learning about, you know, the history of the automobile.
Yeah, they don't care about the one designer that, you know, had a fight with the other designer, and they were going to piss each other off, and they were going to do this, and that's how this car got created, right? And that's the thing.
I'm intrigued by it.
Yeah, that I love, personally, like, I love to hear about, like, personal vendettas and rifts within automakers or spawned builds because of like, oh, I'm going to show him this, you know?
Yeah.
You know, stuff, you know, Bill Mitchell and Duntoff, you know, of getting pissed off and the way they went and direct. Yeah. Like, that, there's so much of that. And then, I mean, let's face it, we're getting old. I mean, think about Foose's history. Think about Boyd's history. Think about, you got 40 years of stuff to go into just the custom automotive world of back in the day, which is, I mean, a lot of the fun that we have on this podcast are getting to hear some of those old stories of behind the scenes stuff. Nobody wants to talk about current day drama, right? But they'll talk about 20 years ago about getting drunk in an elevator and punching out, you know, so-and-so or whatever.
Exactly. Well, let's hope there's enough people in the future to be interested again. We got to make it interesting for them. That's the whole key.
That's what I'm just going to ask. What does that say about our society when they're just, what's the next TikTok? Yeah,
it's a short attention span.
What's the next thing after TikTok? Is it going to have to be down to like 5 seconds? It's going to be a 5 second just like color and blurb, and that's what you're going to be entertained by? That's, the shorter, the better. Yeah,
that's a good question. I don't know where it goes.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully the other direction.
Yeah.
You know?
I hope it slows
down. I agree. But I mean, we're all kind of that way now, aren't we? We get so much information that's crammed at us that, you know, scroll through things fast. You know, now I'm more about, okay, the headline and scanning through the article than sitting down and really enjoying reading it. Like, I've got to force myself to have the patience to read things and really enjoy them now. And I do, but it's, you know, our brains are starting to get wired a little differently, which isn't necessarily a good thing, to your point.
Yeah.
So who knows? We'll see.
I mean, if you think about the technology we have at our fingertips, it's got to be so critical in what you do. I mean, imagine trying to restore some of those cars or procure those cars 40 years ago and then find all the information. I mean, you'd be rummaging through like old dudes' garages trying to find books and various like magazine articles. It's, that stuff's all like so readily available. I mean, not super readily available for the crazy stuff that you do, but there's stuff out there that I'm sure has helped you tremendously in bringing those cars back to life or finding them.
Yeah, well, even eBay back in the day was huge for us. And yeah, I can't tell you how many things we found on eBay that, to your point, would have been impossible before that. But there's still, you know, because of Dave's knowledge, and, you know, he had this amazing collection of old OEM parts and things like that. But we still have to go through, because, you know, there's people that, you know, or maybe even a little bit older than us that have these garages filled with stuff and they're not putting anything on eBay. So there is still some of that that exists. And luckily, having, you know, someone like Dave, he knows where a lot of, you know, a lot of these things are if we need to, you know, find those one set of tires that still exist in the world, which we've had to do before. And, you know, other things that we might have to make today, we can make things that, you know, would have been really difficult before. Now you got a machine that can, you know, make it. But, you know, obviously we want to do whatever the period correct thing is. So if it's period correct, we need to do it the way that the you know, how they did it back in the day. But, you know, if it's on modern things, yeah, shoot, we can program it and, you know, have a machine make it, 3D print it, and, you know, we're good to go. And that was impossible to even think about, you know, a few years ago. So
I don't know how to, I'm probably going to phrase this incorrectly, right? So I'm prefacing
I'll
that.
Let you know.
I want to, I'm sure you will. You'll let me know now and then after as well. I'm interested. You come across as a very, very intelligent guy and a very self-aware guy. And are you, don't take this as pride. I'm trying to get to know you. Are you, do you get bored with things fast? Are you just super curious? Are you open to new ideas? I'm interested in the guy on the outside looking in that seems to be constantly reinventing himself. And it's awesome to see on the things that, I mean, maybe it's just an overload of curiosity, which is also great. There's no right or wrong answer to this. I'm just trying to get to know, like you said, from a micro car to a new amazingly colored fuchsia GT, which I'm not a pink guy, but that color is amazing. It's an amazing color on that.
And it looks so cool in person, the sun. Oh.
Bowberry? Is that the color?
Yeah, I didn't name it that, by the way. Multimatic you know, I sent them a sample and they sent it back and it said Bowberry. And I'm like, it's so beautiful. I'm sold. And okay. I'm not that vain, but I'll take it.
Multimatic, by the way. That's a, you want to talk about unsung hero company stuff.
That's an off camera topic.
But anyway, I've seen you in Japan at the Moon Eye show, full facial hair and fur coats. I've seen you clean shaven. I mean, it seems like you're just like have an appetite for experiences. Is that a correct way
thank you. I absolutely do. I used to say I had automotive ADD, and then I found out, no, I have real ADD.
Just ADD, just normal ADD.
You know, so I got that going for me. But it's, I consider that actually a blessing. I have to multitask a lot of different things. Car dealerships are very complicated businesses, and there's a lot of different things that you always have to be paying attention to, and balls in the air. And then we complicate it even further with all the other fun things that we do with, you know, customizing and restaurants and all the other kind of experiences that we try to have here at Galpin. And, you know, I really got a lot of sense of the adventure from my parents. They were a lot wilder than I am. My parents took me to Israel, and then we drove up to Lebanon in 1979 when there was all kinds of conflict going on, and they dropped me off in a bombed out radio station because we were, you know, doing Christian missionary work there. And, they started off doing like missionary things in West Africa. And then they, you know, discovered, you know, gold and diamond mining in Sierra Leone. And this is before the Blood Diamond, but after the other coups. So we were in this weird kind of area of peace. And, you know, so we're out there in, you know, the middle of Sierra Leone and just these crazy things. And then when the Iron Curtain fell, we started importing cars into Russia and the former Soviet Union, and that actually started because there was a famine that was about to hit in Russia, and they realized they didn't have a seed. So because my mom had a magazine and, you know, we were doing a Christian outreach, they asked if they could get seed for Russia. So they worked with Secretary of State Baker, and we gathered like $2 million worth of seeds, and the government, I think, had a plane that flew it over, and then they helped distribute the seed to the farmers so that there wouldn't be a famine there. And then it was like, well, hey, they're going to need cars too. You know, capitalism was just starting in Russia, and the first dealership started opening. So we started importing cars into Moscow, and actually, I wrote my senior at USC my business plan on importing cars into the former Soviet Union. So I got to go there, and then I went to Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan. So that was all because of my parents. You know, they were real adventurers, and now I kind of feel a bit normal compared to them. I'm not doing anything that wild. But I think that sense of adventure was something that my parents were really into, and they always had an open mind to people and to things. They were very non-judgmental and really just loved people for who they were. So, sex, color, creed, sexual orientation, they just loved whoever they were with, and, you know, the best example that I could have. So, you know, we love everyone on earth equally. No one's better or worse than anyone else on this planet. It's what I believe. And, you know, I try to keep that, that attitude. And, you know, I was taught that, you know, we're here to be servants, and, you know, we're here to be servants to our customers. And luckily, one of those ways to serve is to, you know, have some weird fun cars out here. You know, I can, hopefully serve by having some fun and sharing that fun with other people. So I'm just I'm really blessed. I couldn't imagine having better example for parents, and thank you for those kind words. I don't know what to say. I do try to be self-aware. And I think that's important, for all of us as humans. Watch our surroundings, and people said, for, and actually it just came up We're promoting a new sales trainer here at Galpin, and he was talking about, you know, the history of Galpin. He's been here 20 years and how much it's meant. And I was talking about, like, my dad had to bring up some issues with me that were insulting at the time. Because he said, you know, people don't think you're very friendly. Like, well, what do you mean? I love people. Like, I'm shy. But he said, yeah, you walk through the showroom with your head down. I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking so much. And I'm like, well, that's not when you think. When you walk through the showroom, you greet, you say hello, and you know, you're warm to people. And then, you know what? I was the same person. I just changed, my reaction to things. And when you start looking around and being present with people, it makes all the difference. And not thinking that you're better than anyone else. And when you have the attitude of a servant, I don't know, that kind of comes naturally. And so I was, I just give credit to my parents and to God. And I just, you know, today try to count my blessings and then still have fun at what I do and grow our business. So. And hang out with you guys.
Yeah,
so doing stuff like this is a ball. So thank you.
That's a hell of an outlook.
Yeah.
And honestly, we have like a segment in this show where we generally ask people one of two things: either what's the best advice you've ever gotten, what's the best advice, or give some advice, right? And that really is that kind of resonates. That's super cool. If you think about that, like, you know, being a servant to some extent, like, I mean, that is what we do. Like, we're here to please our customers, right? And we want to offer them the best experience. They're here to build a high-end, expensive vehicle. And it's really about that entire experience and then delivering them something that's enjoyable.
That's exactly where I was going to go. I wanted to ask you, like, we can hit pause. Like, we're not going to do it, but it's nice to say. Inside baseball, do you ever, because it's in the hour that we've talked, it's very obvious that your servant's mentality, customer service, customer first, doing everything, the customer before yourself, customer before the company, all that is very evident. We have a very similar ethos and mentality. Do you ever sit around with, you know, your inner circle, management team, other guys, and do you ever just chuckle to yourself of like, it's so easy just to do what's right for the customer? Why are all of these competitors not doing it? Why has it become so rare to just offer good customer service?
Well, I mean,
day to day, it's not easy. There's a lot of things you have to do that's not easy, but it's easy just to make the decision going forward that forever in business that we're going to please the customer. Yeah. It's not a secret to success.
Well, it's easy in the regard, like if you're an honest person, it's easy because you have, you know, borders. You have to tell the truth and be honest, but it's not easy telling the truth all the time. It's not easy, being up front and where other people might hide things. So it makes it easier on one hand and maybe a little bit more, and difficult's not the word, but it you have to do it that way. I don't chuckle at that, at the competition, but I don't really spend a lot of time. I don't look at their negative aspects. I might look at what they do right and try to emulate that. And we always try to keep a humble attitude. And every time we have new hires that come through and I talk to them, I say, look, we might be the number one dealership in the world, but doesn't mean we know everything and doesn't mean we do everything right. So if you've got an idea, we'd love to hear it. And if you see something that you did better where you came from, let us know, maybe we got away from doing something we used to do, or maybe that's a better idea because, you know, life evolves and our business evolves and people evolve and their needs evolve. And, my dad used to talk about, being at the beach, and the ocean's always the ocean and the sand's always the sand, but every day it's different. You know, every day there's something new that's going on, and that's how life is. And, you know, if You know, we're always looking for ways to delight people and have fun. And you know, like I said, it's not about now at the same time, if I see, you know, if they're not taking care of their customers, well, they're going to naturally, hopefully, hear about our reputation. And my dad always said, your reputation never stands still. It's either going up or it's going down. So always be working on it, you know, going up. So, you know, in the car dealership world and in building cars and in dealing with people, it's never easy. I mean, this is a challenging business and it's intense and the competition is ruthless. But that's how it is. And that's what makes us better. And having that competition is a gift. If we didn't have that competition, we wouldn't get better.
Right.
So I'm more attuned to those that are doing the right thing than those that are doing the wrong thing. You know, those are my competitors, those that are doing a great job. And that's who I want to learn from. And it's fun to compete with people like that. And you know, we usually those are like, you know, good relationships on the outside. So we get in have the battlefield in the middle, but we're on the outside and, you know, giving each other high fives on the outside. Which, you know, that's how it should be. You know, life's too short. We gotta make the most of it and, you know, try to have a positive impact on the world.
And you've got an unbelievably positive attitude. So I've got to ask, from, you know, just being in business and dealing with the ups and the downs and not every day, you know, it's certainly not all sunshine and rainbows. On Instagram, it looks really cool. You know, we're building lots of badass cars and the videos look cool and everything, but there's time, you know, it's tough. When it does get ruthless and it gets tough and, you know, a guy, you know, a new hire, you know, hangs the throttle on a brand new vehicle at the showroom and it backs into the new GT that was custom painted or something like that. Just using examples.
That's happened.
Yeah, of course it has.
Yeah, right.
I mean, how do you deal with those situations, or do you remain positive? Are you stern? How do you learn from those? How do you push through those?
Because you don't want to waste the training opportunity or the learning experience, but right. You also don't want to, like, choke,
and I'm just curious because you've got an unbelievable outlook and attitude. So I'm curious how you handle those and stay positive.
Well, you know, my dad always let us make a mistake once. You know, just don't repeat it. You better learn from it. Hey, I've screwed up like that. I was delivering a brand new van and backed right into our stop sign, and. You know, and these people just signed and bought their new van, and I just, you know, wrecked it for them, right? So we had to make that right for the customer. I've delivered the wrong car because I forgot to check the VIN number, and you know, cars look exactly the same. We make mistakes, and mistakes are allowed, but as long as we're learning from our mistakes, that's all right. If somebody isn't learning from their mistakes, well, they're probably not in the right position. So we look, you know, if they've got the right heart, maybe there's another position here. And if they really don't care, this probably isn't the place for them. We don't have any tolerance when it comes to dishonesty. That's a zero tolerance policy, or, you know, anything that would, you know, be discriminatory or, you know, good and bad, right?
Sure.
We have a moral standard here that is inflexible, but mistakes, you know, we got our first Aston Martin Vanquish, and our porter backed it into a pole.
Yeah.
Guess what? He was here for another, I think 2 decades, and he never did that again. Right. and you know, so that was a very expensive training course, but he learned, right? Now, if he had done that a couple more times, probably not going to move.
Or even
one more time,
yeah.
Probably not moving Aston's for us anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Because that wouldn't be serving our customers in the right way.
Yeah.
But look, we're human beings, and we've all fallen short. We've all done things that we shouldn't have done. And we look for it. Is it a character flaw or is it a blip? We've all blipped. I have. I've done dumb things. And luckily I was forgiven for them. So I was forgiven, therefore I forgive. But if it's a character flaw, then we don't put up with that because that doesn't serve our customers.
That's a great outlook. Yeah, dude, he's Bo, you're something else. Honestly, nothing very like kind. What I expected. We got a couple of good standard questions, and I'm really interested in getting into that.
All right.
Fire away,
but
man.
Before we get to that, this is going to seem so cliche and so like an opportunity for some type of clickbait and stuff like that. But
or maybe it is. You never know.
I'm super interested from because I want to say in your position, you're probably the first guest that's had this much knowledge in the dealer model business, right? Mm-hmm. Traditional car dealer kind of. So I'm wanting to know what your actual take is on such a push for EV and the electrification of all cars.
You want to hear it from the horse's
and
mouth?
I mean, obviously there's going to be both sides of the story and there's good and there's bad. And there's, I mean, obvious positivities and that, but what's your take on the effort, especially in California, to do what they're doing on EVs?
Well, I might have a surprising take and maybe not. I do love our environment. I believe very much in protecting and saving Mother Earth, and we should be doing everything as a culture and society to focus on that. And we certainly haven't, for many decades it was ignorance, and then we knew better and did it anyway. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley here when we were known for the smog, like London was known for the fog. You couldn't see the mountains across the valley because of the brown haze. I still have asthma, and pollution was what I grew up in, and I don't really like it. My parents started with a partner, a methanol conversion company in 1977, and we converted cars to methanol for this purpose, and also during the gas crunch. And I don't know if it was true or not, but they said the exhaust coming out of a methanol car was cleaner than the air in the San Fernando Valley. Again, I don't know if that was true. We also looked to actually build an electric car with a partner, a couple decades ago. Unfortunately, that wasn't Elon Musk, or I'd be in a little different position right now. But God has me here. So it is something that I do believe in and do believe in technology. I also do believe that it is sometimes the government's role to take action and to, if there is an emerging technology, sometimes it needs some help. Of course, we'd prefer if it didn't, but sometimes it does. And there's many, many examples going back in history where, building our freeway system, whatever you want to call it, the government does play a role, and the government, I do believe, has a responsibility. At first, I wasn't completely convinced that EVs, were necessarily that much better for the environment, but I think over time, that has proven to be true. So I do believe in EVs. We're investing a huge amount in our EV infrastructure here. We have Polestar, for example, which is an all-EV brand, and we've had chargers here from when they first come out. When California talked about going all EV, I even said I would support that. And the reason for it was to push the technology, to push manufacturers. And I do believe that it is a good use of tax dollars to have some incentives behind it to help get us, on the road. But I think pretty soon we'll be able to wean off of that and get where EV doesn't need that. The key is that it has to stand on its own eventually. And EVs are going to have to be profitable in their own right. They're going to have to become much more affordable than they are today. And I do believe that we're going to get there. Now, do I believe that California in 2035 should eliminate all gasoline cars? No, I don't. And I don't think we're going to be quite ready for things then. And, maybe not 100% for my lifetime or our lifetime, I don't know. But The thing is, once people really drive EVs, they're great. They have tremendous torque and power. You can charge at your house. It makes not going to the gas station, you know, it takes out, that, not fun thing to do necessarily in your life. At the same time, you know, would I want to drive an EV to Vegas or cross country? No, I'm not a planner. I have ADD. I just want to go and not think about things. I'd probably forget if I did plan, unless somebody, smacked me across the face or I had, my alarm go off. So I do believe in EVs. I think they're fantastic. Also, love the roar of a V8, there's nothing that replaces that, that roar of an engine. And, it feels, like an animal. It feels like an extension of yourself to some way, where you drive an EV, it feels like technology. It feels like the future. So I think there's benefits for both. So I'm not anti, continuing gasoline. I think we should. At the same time, I think hybrids and plug-in hybrids today have a very important role and could really help bridge between there and here. And I also don't believe it's entirely the responsibility of the auto industry and us to take care of the environment. I think we need to, look at other areas and other businesses or manufacturing, and look at the heat map of pollution across the world. There's some countries where the whole country is this big block, and America has a couple little dots, but it's nothing like you see in other parts of the world. And we've all got to participate in this. So I don't have all the answers, but it's a shared responsibility of every human on Earth to protect the planet, and we can all figure out how we do it individually. But the more EVs I sell, the better I feel about driving the hot rod. You know what I'm saying? Yep. And those cars don't get driven a whole lot, so they don't they're not polluting too much. But I believe in both and sharing the roads. But I also believe that we need to work towards a better future. Was that political enough for you?
I guess the follow up.
You should be a senator in California.
Yeah, 100%. The follow up question.
I just said recording stopped, so I don't know what that was.
It's fine. Still it's the other side.
Okay.
The follow up question to that would be then: do you have like a vacation home, a second residence in like Texas or Florida,
Montana,
where the GT will go and all the big cubic inch, ice engines?
So they're talking about new sales. So it won't be that you have to get rid of your gas car. Gotcha. It's that you won't be able to sell a car that runs on gasoline. And I believe there's exemptions for large trucks and, other things. They're not kicking us off the road yet. And I don't believe in that either. But
I'd just be concerned that when you drive something that's got like big uncorked headers and you're grabbing a coffee over there at Starbucks, that you walk out and there's like a grande cinnamon dolce latte
smashed in
the front seat of the thing.
You're gonna get that,
right?
Yeah,
might happen.
I just saw on some post that someone got their tire slashed for having a gas guzzler, and they're like, "It's an EV." What's wrong with people? But, people don't know. And of course, that's just wrong. And anyone.
All right. First standard question. Now, one of our standard questions for whatever we're going on three seasons now has always been about the guest first car and a story about that car. Sometimes we guess.
There's no way.
I'm gonna ask some qualifying questions first.
Okay. We've come pretty close. We've actually nailed it a few times.
We're talking about first car driving, right? So 16 era, right? So at 16, what year did you turn 16? Around about. You don't have to give the exact if you don't want to.
1986. I'm not shy about being old.
All right. Well, was your car new or used?
Used.
Okay. Was it American?
No.
Okay. 86. used.
You seem like you're locked onto this one.
I've got two directions I'm going.
Okay.
86. Did you purchase it or was it a hand-me-down?
Hand-me-down.
All right.
I'm psyched out on this one.
Really?
Yeah, I'm psyched out. I don't even think I can offer anything up.
But he said foreign.
Now, what do you got?
And we didn't sell foreign cars in 86.
I know where I want to go is wrong.
Okay.
Right? Because I've learned a lot about through his discussion on his family that they were more pragmatic than this. I want to go MG, but it's not an MG, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's a.
S word.
Yeah, I'm going to go Volvo instead of Saab. It's a Volvo. It's a Volvo wagon. But that's just my guess. It's a Volvo wagon. What do you have a guess? You out of it?
I'm psyched out. I wouldn't know where to begin on
this
one.
It's up to you, Bo. What's the answer?
It would be impossible to guess, but you're closer to a Volvo wagon than an MG. But it was my grandmother's car. She lived in Arkansas and had a 1965 Mercedes 220 SE, the four-door with the fins.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was green on green, and that was my favorite color. So when she passed away, that's what she willed me. And it sat in the back of Galpin for a few years. And for my 16th birthday, because I got my grades up, because I was either going to military school or I was getting my car, so I had proper incentive finally, because my grades were awful until then. And then they got good. I could fix it up the way that I wanted. So that was also the first car I got to customize. So at 15, I got to customize my first car, and I had all these crazy ideas, but I ended up going with this gorgeous black lacquer paint. And I had seen this article in Life magazine with a leopard skin interior. And I said, I want to do a leopard skin interior in this Mercedes. And I go to our shop and they're like, Bo, we couldn't find that zebra interior you're looking for. I'm like, zebra? And I go, actually, I was looking for leopard skin. And they go, really? And he walks out of the office and he goes back in the back and he has this roll and he goes like this. And somehow there was this old roll of material from like the, I don't even know how long it was sitting there. That was all in leopard skin. And it was actually the same material that George Barris used on the bed buggy and some other vehicles as well. So I don't think there was any connection there, but so I had just enough to do the stripe down the middle and leopard skin. And then I got to build like a really, rad audio system in it. So it just cranked. And that was my first car. So that one would not be easy to guess.
That's why I didn't want to enter those waters.
You take a shot. Sometimes you miss. Sometimes you land. Favorite car movie and why?
Oh, geez. Of modern car movies, I really did love Ford versus Ferrari, even though it embellished on a few things. And Henry, the deuce would have never, shit his pants like he did my French like that, because that guy was tough as nails. Classic. Boy, would Cannonball Run be considered a car movie?
Absolutely.
That's Josh's.
It had to be Cannonball Run.
Cannonball Run's my favorite.
See that crazy Lamborghini and the girls in the Ferrari. That might have had an impression on a young me too. I think it was Cannonball Run when I was a kid.
Oh, there's nice. So many stars in that. Terry Bradshaw, Mel Tillis.
So good fun.
Yeah.
Who remembers Dom DeLuise?
Dom DeLuise, yeah.
No, I wasn't cool enough to like have watched like Le Mans or, And I watched Bullet and oh geez. you know, it just doesn't, it might be a great car scene, but I don't know, as a movie.
The movie doesn't translate to that. No. Well,
it's like Vanishing Point, you know, it's like the movie's horrible.
Yeah.
The car scene is cool, right?
Yeah. My ADD, I couldn't make it. I watched it all the way through, but.
It's a tough watch.
Excuse me.
We're coming full circle.
Okay.
The best piece of advice that you've ever received.
Boy, that's you know, my parents gave me so much great advice. You know, a lot of the things that, you know, we talked about having a servant's attitude. Certainly, that's led me in all the right directions. Because, you know, when you're serving others, you're putting other people's needs first. It's a way to have humility and self-awareness, I believe. If you're always after yourself, you might get what you want temporarily, but if you serve others, you'll find what you want, and you'll be rewarded with that. You know, Dad, when he's talking about sales, would say, you know, a lot of people come in and they're after money, and, you know, some people make it, some don't. But if you truly serve people, then the money will come, you know, because if you do the right thing, like my dad did, he didn't want to just sell one car. He wanted to create a relationship where people trusted him to send in their friends and send in their family and come back to him. And that's what grew Galpin. Was having that servant's attitude and doing the right thing by others. So in the short term, he might have made a little bit less, but in the long term, he built the number one Ford dealership in the world, and he was the most respected car dealer of all time. And I'll never, you know, quite live up to that. And I hope to emulate that and do the best that I can. But he did that by doing the right thing. And so I think I got to put it there, because it's a great attitude in life. And if you're, you know, if you're looking to serve others, you'll be amazed at what comes back to you. And you might not see it that day, but down the road, someone's going to take notice. And just when you need it, someone's going to be there for you.
That's awesome.
I like that.
Really good. Before we go, I know you got to get back to work and you got to head out. Let's get a plug in for Autopian. You got to inform us as well, right? I went and did a little research and stuff, and it seemed really cool. There's all kinds of news stories and stuff like that, but tell all the listeners what to go do and expect and how to follow.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I got to know my favorite writer, automotive writer, Jason Torchinsky, because he's a comedian as well and doesn't take things too seriously. And always had just funny takes on things. And that's what I enjoy reading, because, you know, a bunch of information is boring to me, and I don't have the attention span to last. So he and another Jalopnik writer, David Tracy, wanted to branch off on their own, and we all really hit it off. So it's an automotive enthusiast site that is about really kind of what the other stories might be missing, or taking a little bit of a deeper tact to things and doing things that. So the Autopian is an automotive enthusiast site, but it's about bringing car cultures together. It's about the positive side of cars and having fun with them. And, you know, we have a lot of humor in what we do, and you know, our writers are really amazing, and we have a very high standard for writing. And I love, you know, David Tracy, the first thing he did was bring me a book on grammar. I'm like, oh, my mother would love you. You know, yes, grammar, please. And, he writes these like 5,000 word stories. I mean, he did the most deep story on a Ford Lightning I'd ever seen. So he's an amazing writer, and he was an engineer with Dodge, and worked on a product at a very young age. And Jason, like I said, was a comedian and now an automotive writer. And now we have writers from all over the world that each one of them is so individual and unique. You know, we have our Uncle Adrian, our goth designer from England. You know, we have our new guy from Lewin from Australia, who can, you know, get the news to us before we're waking up in the morning. So he's on top of things. Our other key writers, like Mercedes, she loves like RVs and motorcycles and smart cars. And it's about the love and appreciation of different kinds of cars. And then when we find stories, it's about maybe telling a little bit of the story beneath the story rather than just, you know, what kind of the headline is. And we have a really amazing membership and, you know, our comments. I love reading our comments as sometimes as much of the stories, because our readers are really amazing as well and really knowledgeable. So it's about the love of automobiles and car culture and bringing people together. So please check it out. It's the Autopian or autopian.com. Tell me what you guys think. And if there's, you know, we're trying to grow it as well. And grow what our audience is. And, you know, we just did a story on like finding uncertainty, and, you know, we haven't really been too hot rod focused. And now people are like, hey, yeah, now they're starting to get into some of the culture that I'm into. So we love introducing new things as well. And, you know, doing some really fun and funny videos, and as well as, you know, real journalistic write-ups on cars and reviews and everything that you'd expect from a normal automotive site as well. And it's growing like gangbusters. I got to say, our publisher, Matt, does an amazing job. We call it the morning dump. we still keep a sense of humor, but it's a great news piece every morning. And he's absolutely amazing. So, and I probably forgot some of the staff that I truly love, but we got an amazing group, and I couldn't be more proud of it. So tell me what you guys think. I'd love to hear what you think about it.
Absolutely, man. And I mean, we never even got into the uncertainty. I mean, you just took it to Detroit this last weekend. I mean, I saw Dave's stories on transporting that thing across the country and the frame breaking and all the different stuff and all. And I mean, there's so much more to get into. I want to hear you. I'm going to make you say it on air. Like, can we do this again? There's so much more to get into.
You guys are awesome. So I wish fun. I was sitting there with you. It'd be even easier fun.
But we're gonna figure that out one out for the next one.
Bo, all right, that sounds great.
Absolutely awesome. I mean,
it's been a pleasure, man.
Yeah, we're gonna have to hook up again. We're on the West Coast. We're gonna come by and see you. I'd love to have dinner. Please. We need to just come away with a whole new respect.
100%.
Oh, you guys are so kind. Well, please come out here. I'd love to show you our craziness out here. We got an amazing restaurant here as well. If you want to come for lunch, we can have dinner. But I'd love to hang out with you guys. You guys are cool, man.
Right on,
dude.
It's
been my pleasure.
Appreciate it. Thanks again, Bo. Safe travels.
Thanks, man.
Thanks so much. God bless you guys.
Thank you.
Take care.
Great one. Bye-bye.
Big thanks again to Bo. Remember, you can keep up with him on Instagram at Bo Bachman, Galpin Autosports. Galpin Ford, Galpin anything, Bo Bachman, Autotopian, autopian.com. That was awesome.
Dude, so cool.
How good of a person does it make you feel?
That's my only gripe about the entire podcast, is that coming out of it, it makes me feel like a terrible person.
Yeah,
I know. He's a good
He's way
dude,
better of a
man.
Person than both man. Of us.
Solid, dude. I mean, unbelievable advice, unbelievable businessman, such a cool collection. Wow, what a story, dude. That's a rad story.
Yeah.
And like you said, we didn't even scratch the surface.
There's so much stuff
dude.
To get into. Yeah. We're doing it again. I'm telling you right now.
That was almost like an overview, you know?
Yeah, getting to know each other.
That was like the Cliffs Notes of Bo Bachman. I feel like there's a lot.
Now, unfortunately, Phil didn't get to join us.
No.
He wasn't here.
No, you know, duty calls.
Are we gonna break the news?
I don't know if Phil wanted to tell everybody or if that was...
We should tell.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, this is a great podcast, but Phil had to miss it because, like you said, duty calls.
Yeah.
If Mazda Corporate calls and says, hey, we demand your presence... Right.
When Mazda Corporate's putting on a lifestyle event...
Right.
You got to be there, right?
I will say that the whole packet that they sent...
it was something.
And Phil was like excited about it, but they're saying that they know that they've got the younger audience. They need a more middle-aged demographic for the Mazda brand. They're introducing Phil as the brand ambassador.
So seldom do you see that angle.
Right.
You know, it's usually companies that are like, you know, kind of falling out of touch. They're generally reaching out. And they're like, we need a younger demographic. Right. But they're looking to take Phil as the poster man.
We need dad bots.
Yeah.
We need
We need
middle-aged
graying facial hair.
That's who we need to push the market.
I could see it right now, dude. He's gonna be standing there. He's gonna have the race suit rolled down with the sleeves tied.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be like a leaning in front of the spec Miata race car.
Are you a dad and you want to race cars?
Yeah, get your kid to school fast
in a Miata.
Right.
Hey, zoom zoom. Yeah. More power to him.
We gave him a break for a long time.
Yeah.
That's what you get.
Look what happens.
Yeah, that's what you get when you're not here to defend yourself.
Yeah. Who's laughing now? We've been making fun of him, and he's got a corporate gig.
Yeah.
Before we go, we got two things.
What do we got?
We've got Whiskey Review, but that's coming. I've got something a little special you don't even know about.
Ooh, I like surprises.
We haven't done an On the Gas in a while, right?
No, we haven't.
You got
something?
This is kind of like an On the Gas, but I'm just using it as an excuse to show you something fucking cool.
Okay.
So this is just much like you are enamored by the GT and must have one.
Dude, before you go into that, can we just stop? How the fuck everybody has a fucking Ford GT?
Oh, I know. I knew he had one, and I hated that he brought it up because I was going to bring it up.
And I felt like I insulted him when I was like, of course you do.
Right.
But it's like, it's getting to be ridiculous now. It's like 75% of the podcast guests.
I'd say 90.
Have Ford GTs.
Honestly, at this point, like more, I think GTs are more common than Camrys. Everybody's got them. Dude, I would say I wouldn't want one. Everybody's got.
You know
so
what? That's, I
now.
Think that's what I'm going to go with.
I would. Yeah. I would. Right. It's the like, fact that you don't have one.
Yeah, I'll use that same analogy. Like you tell people, you're like, hey, you pull to a stoplight. Probably going to be a guy in a GT there. Like, GTs, yeah, I'd rather
GTs.
Right, I'd rather be in my Legend truck.
All right. Right. Now, before we show this, everybody needs to go to Mini Trucks Puerto Rico. All right.
Okay.
Are you? I'm just
Mini
telling
trucks.
You.
Puerto Rico.
I don't know if you're ready for this.
I'm not. Fired up.
All right. Watch this.
Where did you come up with this? Is somebody inside that?
Oh, yeah. These are little mini trucks.
Are they mini people?
Watch. Watch the size of this. Now watch.
They're like street bike motors, huh?
Now watch the guy.
How does he get out of there?
Well, it's got a door. It's got a door in it. It's just miniature. They build all these cool things. Look at this.
Can you buy these?
Yeah, you can buy them. Look at that.
Oh, damn. That's pretty cool.
The, let's see.
That is really loud.
You're telling me that around the neighborhood?
Damn.
Like, they've got full-blown tractor trailers.
They got a website?
Yeah.
What's the pricing look like? On
I don't know. They don't have them for sale. They are for sale. They don't have pricing on them.
I'll say that it is cool. What I'm most curious about is how the hell you found yourself on this page.
It popped up. I wasn't certain. It just popped up as a little thing. And I started diving into it. I mean, they've got like full infotainment systems inside. They're showing them building the chassis. It's crazy. Hmm. You're telling me that would like donuts in that?
Yeah, I see it. Yeah.
Hey.
It's
mini trucks, Puerto Rico.
I didn't know that was your style, honestly.
It's
but it's cool.
It's not something that I would have ever searched out, but once I saw it, I'm like, little fast bread truck, be pretty cool.
It'd be really cool if we found out. Like, so we're gonna Dave and Kevin are returning
coming up,
and we had a little conversation out at SEMA. We'll probably dive into this. They've got like,
save that.
Okay.
Save that.
So I'll skip that and I'll be like, man, what if we found out that Oil and Whiskey had this
massive
crazy following in Puerto Rico?
Following.
You could maybe go there
and
experience one of those.
I I wouldn't mind having myself a little mini truck Puerto Rico.
That is, I could see that being a guilty pleasure of yours, where I could see you riding around on a Sunday around the cul-de-sac.
I'd like to have like a small pile of dirt.
There's Josh.
And take the dump okay. truck.
Hey, Jody, where's Josh?
He's moving dirt.
Of course he is.
In his mini truck. There you go. We've got a whiskey review.
Yeah, that one sat up there for a long time. That's been hanging out, man.
Mark, a few months.
Mark Bowler gave us this, as you can see on the back, that little Bowler sticker.
You think Blood Oath put that B on there?
I don't think so. Being that it is the exact same logo as Bowler Transmissions, I have a hunch, and that it came in a box years ago for Christmas from Mark Bowler.
It wasn't years ago.
Yeah, it was, because this is, well, it's a 2017. Is that distilled or bottled? Never again be made. Pack date 1/9/2017. And it doesn't have an age statement on it. It's been hanging around for a while. I'm going to say it's 7 years old. Been in the, like, bottled. I don't think that's a 7 year old. There's no age statement on it. It's just been hanging out on the shelf.
This hasn't been here for 7 years.
It's been here a while. Yeah.
Okay. If you say so. I just don't think it has. But
hey, agree to disagree.
Learn from Bo. Be a better person.
Yeah. Yeah. We need to be a servant. More of a servant. All I could think about the whole time, and again, because I'm not a great person.
Right.
I would Neither like of us are. To be a servant and serve you an ass whooping. that's all I can think about.
Well played. Well.
But part of me during that, I did stop and I'm like, no, that is solid advice. But then my mind went to that next.
Because you're a bad person. Right. But
I fought
that.
I fought it.
Right.
Like, because I wanted to be.
But then the bad one.
Right. At any rate, Blood Oath. Pack number 3. They've got quite a few of these out now. I think they're up like into the teens now, maybe. They're up there.
They're so confusing. There's so many of them. That and Barrel Bourbon, there's just so many.
Yeah. It's another one of those deals where I struggle because the bottle and the label looks the same on every single one of them. Mm-hmm. So you don't know, right? Mm-hmm. You roll the dice. It's not a cheap date. You know, those are usually $70 to $100, I think, something like that. So you never know what you're getting. You got to remember what you've got, like if you have been collecting them. But it's good, dude. It's really good. The flavor's outstanding. It's hot for light proof. Did you notice that?
What was the proof?
The proof is, I saw it before, 98 proof, 98.6.
Oh, wow, it is. Yeah. I was thinking it's way higher. It's
a lot of burn.
It's like a spicy, almost like on the rye side. Does it have the mash bill or anything on it? Cabernet barrels, and read. A lot.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
I mean, lots of words. I'm
going to hit it with a 6.9.
Man, that's a good review. Yeah. That's a
felt good coming out.
Yeah.
I like it. It's a buy it for sure. I don't know. I've got one at home and I don't know which pack number it is. I'll have to check it out, compare them.
But
I like it. Solid.
It's not your normal cab cask finished whiskey that I'm used to. It goes a little scotchy, a little peaty. For me, it's a little peaty.
It's you're getting that sophisticated palate, you know.
I'm not going to argue with you. It's a 6.9. Yeah. It's a really good review. Okay. It's a damn good review. Hey,
yeah, it's a fucking review.
Yeah, it's not bad, but it's not a 7. Right. It ain't a 7, but it's close. That's why we
give it a 6.9.
Give it a 6.9. 69. Phil's not here. We can do all kinds of dirty shit. Big thanks again to Bo. You can keep up with him on all of his Instagram channels. Make sure you go and be. Oh, damn.
It's hitting you in the chest.
Yeah, it is. Sorry. Make sure you go become a member of Autopian. Thanks for listening to Oil and Whiskey with the Roacher Shop, an Ironclad original. If you like the show, be sure to leave a rating and review. Leave us a comment. Tell Jeremy how stupid his face looks. Thanks again. We'll see you again next week.
What's the matter with you, dude?